Hamilton is the beauty.
Because she knew something. Why does anybody get cast? They know shit. That's why. They know stuff they don't want them knowing, so they have to give them the good roles. Oi, she knows I'm a pedophile.
Yeah, but she had good roles. It's not like she didn't play good roles. It's like,
yeah, I guess that was on her way down, eh? Because she was started in cinema, and then it was, and then back to, yeah, like it was in the middle of the Terminators.
But it's not like she's overly beautiful.
No, she plays concern well. Oh my gosh, Terminator 1 came on the TV. I don't know, 3 months ago, and I was on the couch with my mom, and it was actually a love seat. So it's really close. And then the scene where Linda Hamilton and the guy have sex comes on.
Yeah.
And it's so long. It's so long. And the part where it's like their hands are like one is fingers are clasped in the other and they're squeezing to the pulsing, probably to the thrusting. And I'm just like, this is the most uncomfortable. I actually said to my, we're changing this. We're changing the channel now. She's like, I want to see it finish. No, she didn't say that. She didn't say that. But
I wish she would have said, I want to see him finish.
Yeah, exactly. That must be, if you saw World Police, the South Park movie, American Patrol, whatever it was, where they do that extra long sex scene. The puppet scene. It must be taken from that, because that sex scene in Terminator 1 is ungodly long. They're even like reposting shots from the beginning of the sex. It's so absurd. And it's all the implied shots. Like every stereotypical implied sex shot you could see is just terrible. Just the sheets being torn and
sheets being torn. Who cares? Torn sheets during sex.
I don't know. Hulk Hogan. I don't know.
I need to get in here.
Oh, by the way, on our last episode when we were talking about Sid.
Yeah.
I rewatched the Shockmaster Fallout.
Yeah.
And you clearly say, hear Sid the first thing. He goes, I told you. First thing. You see the Shockmaster explosion, Shockmaster, trip, helmet, I told you.
He's the master of like, not universe. Giving a fuck that he's live on TV.
No, yeah. And then Bulldog goes, oh, he fell on his arse.
So the Terminator was an hour and 47 minutes long, so it's not like they needed to pad that sex scene.
Oh, no. No, 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 no. It was really long. And a great movie, though. I got it. Like, overall.
It's awesome. Honestly, the only reason I'm not showing it to the kids is because of the fucking sex scene.
Well, there's that. And it's horrifying. Even watching it a couple weeks ago, a couple months ago, whenever it was, the cuts, like, between, they make him, he's still horrifying at least I find.
As a villain?
Yes, and because the special effects were what they were in 1984, it required more cinematic tricks.
Right.
So you're not seeing like a CGI being, you know, that can blink and think. They have to cut in and cut out quickly to cover for the bad makeup.
Right.
Which made it look way scarier because your imagination is filling in the rest.
See, I wish I could live – I could relive Terminator 2 not knowing that he ends up being the good guy.
You say that again.
What I mean is that, like, in Terminator 2, like, he shows up and he's there to help them, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I mean, I don't think I ever saw it under that lens where I didn't think he was the good guy.
I'm the same as you because I'd never seen Terminator 1.
That's it. And so, yeah. I that must be really cool. That must
it
be
made, such a... Yeah, it made a limit because for me, I was like, Linda Hamilton, what's your problem? He's here to help you.
It's Arnold Schwarzenegger, you
idiot. He's here to get you out of the place. Did you see how creepy that fat nurse was? The guy, the white fat nurse who was like kind of assaulting her?
Who's creepier, the fat nurse or the warden in Silence of the Lambs?
I don't remember the warden from the Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, he's the weird, like, he's writing a book.
Is he the one? He's like, would you fuck me? I'd fuck me?
No,
like
that's
that
a
guy?
Prisoner, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
No, wait. No, I'd fuck me is Buffalo Bill with the mangina. Oh.
The mangina, yeah. I was just left with Silence of the Lambs being like, all right, it's upsetting, but it's not as terrifying as everybody made it seem to be. That's what I was left with.
Never thought it was a terrifying movie. I think it's a good movie. It's really good. Like
the acting, very good movie.
The acting's good. It's you know what's really great about it is I think they do a really great job showing Jodie Foster as like. I don't want to get into like that it's feminist propaganda or anything, but like she's the only female on the force, right? And they cast all the men really tall. So, like, she looks so fucking tiny.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting choice with her. And the only part I do find terrifying in Silence of the Lambs is the end when she's – I don't know if you remember it, but when she's in Buffalo Bill's basement and all the lights go out.
I think so, yeah. And then she finds the pictures or something?
No. Like, she's down there with him. And, like, he's kind of, like, hunting her. And, like, she's kind of looking around. But then he shuts the power down in the house. And it just goes pitch black.
Right. And then, I don't remember that one.
Oh, it's really great. Like, it's okay. A really, really great moment. Lots of tension.
She was a great hummer.
All right. Welcome to Montreal to Memphis, everyone. Reg.
Hey.
Reg. What's going on in your neck of the woods?
Not much. It's we're all pretty much on lockdown here.
I don't want to do any preamble. Do you feel like doing preamble?
I don't have a problem with preamble. Right. I think we're more in the amble part because the preamble got covered just before.
Yeah. The part I can't keep in the show because of all the
you
things.
Can start at Terminator. At Terminator we start really good.
Yeah, and then I got to cut it off. That's where I am going to start. I'm going to start at Terminator, but then I got to cut it off when you start going into Jodie Foster.
But that's the end. It's perfect. You can just snippet that part off. Yeah, there's nothing in the middle.
It. I'm going to snip it.
Yeah, I gave you a perfect bookend. That was me subtly directing things. I'm like, all right, we're going to end here. So Chinaman. Like, it's pretty much. I'm always sorry.
You got to stop saying Chinaman. I'm not editing that out.
So. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
I love the Chinamen. I love their foods and their records keeping, their statistics. I think everything is great.
Are they good at statistics?
Yes, they were right on there with the Wuhan numbers, and now we're just dealing with the rest. So there's nothing to complain about there.
Was this an act of war?
I don't know. I really don't know. It could be. I think it was just sloppiness on all ends here.
The sloppy Chinese scientists.
It could be. It could be, hey, you know, here's our active war bioterror weapon. Whoops, I forgot when I was, you know, shopping for eel. I don't know.
Well, it's a bat. Didn't the guy eat a bat?
It started out as a bat, and then they were saying in the media – I love how the news reports, like, are completely the opposite today as they were back then, because it started out with, oh, you got it from a bat. Then there was all the stuff that came out. I was like, don't worry. It can't be transferred from animals to humans. Like, wait. What?
You got it from a fucking bat. What
did
I say?
Where did it start then? They're like, don't worry. You don't have to throw out your cat. It doesn't transfer. I'm like, no. And it's like, oh, now the cat has AIDS. Like, it's like, what am I supposed to understand here? Yeah, it was we've been totally flipped around with it. And then it was like, oh, you can't transfer it and from people to people. I'm like, that's racist. Chinese people are people. It was just the world is upside down right now.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Wuhan or bat or eel.
Yeah, or whatever it was.
Whatever it was.
Yes, no, but yes, they're having people investigate these labs now. They're not coming out with anything conclusive, but they're being investigated. That's as far as I've read about.
When I was 13 or 14, there was a show called Ancient Prophecies on, and it talked about viruses coming from deep within the earth. Is this one of those viruses?
Yes.
Okay. They showed a picture of a man deforesting a forest, so it was like a mixed message, like the more we break up the forest, the more
– Look, Mother Nature has sent us to our rooms, okay? She got up. She's pissed off. We're polluting. We're using plastic bags like there is no tomorrow. And so she sent us this disease to tell us to stop foresting because the climate is changing.
Everything is packaged in plastic.
Yeah.
Why is the plastic bag the problem?
Because the plastic, what it does is that it rips holes in the ozone, which causes acid rain.
But what
the acid rain causes racism.
Oh, yes.
And that causes us to hate the Chinese. And then Mother Nature said, enough.
Enough of the Chinese hatred.
Enough of the Chinese hatred, and here's your disease. Which, you know, ironically, if enough bodies decompose into the earth would, you know, give Mother Nature a lot more work to do in terms of repurifying that. But
could the dead bodies transfer the disease to Mother Nature?
Back to Mother Nature. That's the thing, because if I'm Mother Nature, I don't want those dirty bodies near me.
No. In me. In me. They want to be inside of her, not even near inside
of
her.
That's what I got from the Instagram page, Feminist Memes. That's what it says. All of those things. So that's the reasoning behind it. And Barack Obama agreed with it, and he's hung out with that white autistic girl. So it has to be true.
Hillary Clinton?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, cool.
Very good.
Yes.
Very good.
Yes. Why did you want to talk about Randy Savage?
Why did I want to talk about him? Because I think he is speaking of there's no transition for that.
speaking of Chinese viruses. Speaking of
Chinese diseases. He tried to get rid of Ricky Steamboat, but
not Chinese.
I wanted to talk about Randy Savage because you have created a great through line for his career in the WWF. And I just remember growing up and he was the first wrestler. Well, he's like the third wrestler that I would call my favorite. Hulk Hogan was my first, mm-hmm. then Junkyard Dog, and then Randy Savage during his title reign. And you've come up with a great storyline, like a through line, where you sort of encapsulated his entire WWF career from late, was it 84?
He comes in 85, I think.
85?
And yeah, then, but no one write me with any bullshit that he came in 84. It's possible I made a mistake.
Do people do that on this? On these?
No one listens to these, so don't.
All right, good. Yeah. That's why we've been saying the horrible things we've been saying.
Yeah. he's not at WrestleMania, right? You'd think he'd be on the card.
Why was he not at WrestleMania? I don't understand.
Well, I don't think he's signed yet. I think he comes in after WrestleMania.
Does he?
Yeah, because why else would you have David Sammartino on the card and not him?
Yeah. I guess.
I mean, there's a lot of garbage on that card.
Yeah.
That show gets such a pass for being like the first.
Yeah. It was like a star. It was that first time where you see stars and wrestlers.
Yeah.
Together.
Yeah. At last, Liberace, Liberace. And Hulk Hogan.
How did they get that one? You know that Pat Patterson was pushing for that.
We get the Liberace.
We get the Liberace.
Yeah. Okay, but Muhammad Ali too. No.
The black one. Okay. We've both personally met Pat Patterson.
Yeah, in a karaoke bar.
A karaoke bar, yeah. He did try to. Anyway,
a karaoke bar that his face is on the what was on the wall of.
Yeah, they were painted on because he would sing there, and he would sing My Way.
Yeah, he sang My Way the night we were there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they bullied the Miz right in front of us.
They did. That was a great night.
This is in 2005 when Miz was nothing, and they just ripped his ass off stage.
They did. They all took off their shirts.
Yeah.
Matt Stryker was odd.
Yes. Yes. What did Matt Stryker say to you?
So basically, we're in the bar, and like the entire all the boys and the girls like flooded the karaoke bar. We knew that they would do that because it was Pat Patterson's.
Yeah. To give you like some context, it was the night that Ashley Mazzaro won the Diva Search. It was Raw in Montreal, and it was the night that Michaels played Bret Hart's music.
Yeah, and the segment went long because we were booing so much.
Because the roof was about to just explode.
And it was the night that Hulk Hogan wrestled Kurt Angle in the main event of that.
Right.
It was the go-home show to SummerSlam 2005.
Yeah.
So they all came in, except for the ones we really wanted to see, like Hogan.
Yeah, right. Vince.
But Matt Hardy was there, Coach was there, Stryker was there, Batista was there. Stacey Keibler was there. Jericho was there. Ashley was there. Maria
Chavo Guerrero was there.
Chavo Guerrero. Kerwin White.
The Hurricane.
The Hurricane was there. And I approached, I think, every single wrestler to talk to them.
Yeah.
And a few of them stood out.
Please.
Matt Stryker. Yeah, so Matt Stryker, I said to him... we were just talking because, he was talking to me more than I was talking to him. That was weird because I didn't really want to talk. I didn't care for Matt Stryker at that point. I went to talk to other people. And I said, where are you from? He said, and he said it without any hesitation. He goes, I'm from New York. I watched the towers fall.
So it was one sentence.
One sentence. Like he said it a million times. And then like I was just like, you know, when you say, oh, yeah, there's beautiful women in this bar. We have really beautiful women in Montreal. He goes, oh, yeah. Are they into unprotected anal? Like, no pause. There was nothing. It was just that. Oh, yeah? Are they into unprotected anal? So that was Matt Stryker. School teacher.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did we get on that topic?
Pat Patterson.
Yeah, so that was – yeah, that we were there because of Pat Patterson. So, yeah, so that was WrestleMania 1, which was left off Randy Savage.
Because he only came in June. He came in June 85.
Oh, we did. Okay, so that would make – okay. So he wins the Intercontinental pretty quick.
Well, he wins in 86. right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, before WrestleMania 2. So he wins it within 6 months.
That's right. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, when did you feel? Yeah, around that time. The thing that I sent you today, which was like him with Regis, were like, if anyone wants to look it up, it's just look up, go to YouTube and type in Macho Man announces his divorce with Elizabeth, and it sounds really depressing. But what struck me about it, and I wasn't trying to gaslight you when I sent it to you earlier, what struck me about it is that I just thought it was just such a classy way for him to handle the whole situation. Like
they basically did not do their homework at all.
No.
Well, Kathy Lee didn't, because she was a whore, but basically, yeah, there was a large crowd. I don't know. They were doing some sort of, I don't know, like small arena show.
Major event.
Yeah, and Macho Man was in his like tuxedo. And
which is very colorful.
Yeah, very colorful tuxedo. And Kathy Lee's like, "Oh, how's Elizabeth?" He's like, "Well, we just got divorced."
Yeah.
Like, it was just like silence. And like, you just, the look on their face, like, oh,
but yep, it's not her fault. It's not my fault. It's just one of those things that happens. Yeah, but I still love her very, very much.
And like, they tried to like make like weird jokes to get themselves out of it. But like you said, he handled it really well.
Yeah. And it's just such a shame, because it kind of ties into like these wrestlers we met too. Like, how many of them were just fucking scumbags, right? Like,
yeah.
Like Hurricane that night at the bar spent the entire night on the phone with a girl. In the bathroom.
I was in the bathroom and I was peeing in the bathroom, and then he comes in, mm-hmm. and he's on his phone, and he's like, he's on his phone with his girlfriend who's not there, and he's like, "Yeah, baby, yeah, no, it's all right, no, baby, listen." And then like, he sees it's getting uncomfortable, like, so he goes into the stall. So I just see a green tuft of hair sticking over the stall. "No, baby, listen." And then anyway, I found out that he went home with a girl there.
Right.
That night. Yeah.
See, scumbags.
Yeah. Yeah, these were total scumbags.
Yeah. So, and this is a guy that everyone, Savage, that is, seems to be a guy that everybody stands out as like a real class act, a real first-rate individual. Besides his insane jealousy, apparently.
Besides locking her, Elizabeth, in a locker room by herself for, you know, what seemed to be hours.
Yeah, would you trust any of the men in the promotion at that point?
None, especially when they're just roided up in that era. Like Don Morocco with veins like popping out of his ears. Like, yeah, no.
Jake Roberts and his snakes.
Yeah, his snakes.
And his snakes? You can't trust a man with snakes.
And like the Dynamite Kid willing to like rape men just for the fun of it? No.
Yeah, and then that's a locker culture that's permeated from that time just until like what, like maybe in the last like 3 years that shit's kind of calmed down.
Yeah, I think so.
Like now all they do is play video games apparently, right? And it pisses Vince off. But like it was just a madhouse back there, so you kind of understand why he was actually maybe protecting her to a degree from these.
Well, you would never hear about, like today, you never hear about backstage fights.
No.
Legit fights. Like, I think the last one we ever heard about was like Booker T and Batista, maybe.
And Booker T won like, that fight, right?
He did. And it was like, you know, it was like, I think that was like 10 years ago. Like, beyond 10 years ago. It was like a long time. It was like 15 years ago.
Isn't it when they were fighting at the SummerSlam 2007?
It was for the commercial for the SummerSlam.
Okay.
Yeah, and, sorry, guys. In Canada, we don't call SummerSlam SummerSlam. We call it the SummerSlam because of Bret Hart called it the SummerSlam. So in Canada, we have to pronounce it the SummerSlam.
It's just a national policy that we have.
Yeah. Yes. And we don't call Survivor Series Survivor Series. We call it Montreal.
Montreal. Exactly.
So, yeah, it's just Montreal because of the screw job. So we're still not over that one.
It's pretty ridiculous. When was our last pay-per-view here? 2009?
Oh god, and it was irrelevant by then. Stupid
submission pay per view. Did you go? I didn't go to it.
I didn't go. I didn't go. There was nothing relevant here after we went nuts for Hulk Hogan.
Right.
And then he came back and wrestled The Rock at No Way Out like the next year. I think there hasn't been any relevant since then. Austin returned, but there's been nothing relevant since.
That might be the show with the most relevance with like the lowest quality.
The amount of stars on that show was crazy.
And it's just not a good show.
It wasn't a good show. I mean, you had Hogan and The Rock in the main event, Steve Austin coming back in the co-main event.
Benoit, the
three biggest stars ever, like on in the back last two matches. Yeah, you had a six-man where you had Benoit, Edge, and Lesnar against Team Angle.
Wasn't it a handicap match? With Edge wasn't on that show, was he?
Because Edge got taken off like right before because he actually got injured, right. Legit. But that was the card. And then the Undertaker was wrestling Big Show in like a nothing match. And you had like
Jeff Hardy fought Chris Jericho.
Yeah, it was like a crazy stacked card.
Yeah.
And you had Triple H and Steiner on it.
Right.
Like the quality aside, the name power on that show was like ridiculous.
Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah.
And Survivor Series is possibly the worst Survivor Series of all time, but the most infamous.
Yeah.
Because how many people get pinned from a side suplex from Kurgan? All of them.
Yeah.
And Farouk argues at ringside when he gets eliminated. I always thought that was funny. If you go back and watch the Survivor Series, Farouk gets pinned clean as day in the middle of the ring, and then he spends a good like 6 minutes arguing with the ref on the outside. I'm like, what is he possibly arguing with this guy?
And it was funny because like at that time, like I really liked Ahmed Johnson when he first came in. Mm-hmm. And at that point I was still expecting like something big from him. And then that's when they start really jobbing him out.
Right.
And I was just like, why you can make him into a superstar and you need stars at this point. And I at the time I couldn't understand why.
Well, mind you, by the time he gets to King of the Ring 98, like he is so sad in that match. Like he's so tired.
King of the Ring 98 or 97?
Sorry, not King of the Ring. Royal Rumble 98.
Oh no, I think he was stoned going to the ring in that
one. He has to be.
Yeah, because Kama legit shoves him for no reason on the way to the ring.
Yeah, and he falls.
Yeah.
Like, he trips and falls, and his shorts are up his ass. But that's every match he has.
Yeah.
Why couldn't he get a pair of shorts that fit?
Ugh. And then he was out of the company the next month.
Right.
Yeah. I remember when I was a mark at the time. So we had the off the record interviews with Vince McMahon, with Michael Landsberg, and I didn't know what he had meant by this phrase, but Michael Landsberg said, what happened to Ahmed Johnson? Tony Norris hurt a lot of competitors. And I thought that was like some sort of meaning of like there was, I don't know, like Vince is some sort of cult guru and he's hurt our feelings or something. And then like, I didn't know, but like, it was just because he was literally hurting people in the ring. That was after he had broke Owen Hart's ankle or something. It was, yeah.
Well, if you watch that axe kick, that's not safe.
Oh, it was an axe kick to like the back of the head.
He's
right?
Just bringing that leg down as hard as he can and screaming as loud as he can.
Yeah, he's always, Motive.
And then he went to WCW to feud with Booker T over the initial T.
Oh yeah,
great.
Come on,
lines.
How's that not a conspiracy? They send Vince Russo there, and everything like it's the worst possible of everything.
Look, it's very possible that he was just out of ideas, because when you go as hard as he did, because when you listen to him, I'm not here to defend Vince Russo, right? And we're gonna talk about Randy Savage very soon.
Are we?
Yeah, we'll see.
Is it gonna be funny if we advertise this as the Randy Savage, the ultimate Randy Savage one, tribute, and then never get to
and
it?
And then never get to him. So look, he's basically writing TV from what, like 96 to 99, right?
I think so. Is it? He's contributing in 96, but he takes over as head writer, yeah, in the South Africa Raw from April. African. Yeah, the South African. They're Australian.
It's the only. Does that sound too Australian? South African.
It really does. Oh, it really does.
I can't do accents. I'm terrible.
It's fine. He's the head writer for 2.5 years at this point. Yes.
So 2.5 years of that schedule must be absolutely insane.
Yeah.
Like of living, breathing with Vince nonstop. Vince and Vince.
Yeah.
Vince and Vince.
Vince and Vince.
Vince. Vince and Kang. And so living that lifestyle in Storyland and having to come up with creative ideas all the time, never mind the creative ideas that were shut down. We only saw the ones that made it to TV, right?
Yeah. I'd be curious to know what the ones that were shut down were.
Oh, I'm sure they're terrible. But you never know. Some of them might have actually been pretty good because Vince is weird, right? McMahon.
Yeah.
But like, you know, from someone who writes things, like if you throw out like every single possible idea you can think of for 2 years.
Yeah.
It's very possible that after that, you're going to be overcompensating.
I do know that he wanted to do a Raw where they didn't even set up the ring.
Right.
Do you remember that? That was in the talks?
Are they going to call it – would they have called it Money in the Bank 2020?
Well, I guess that – because nowadays you can just do that because we – well, I mean they threw out the audience, so.
Well, the Chinese did.
Well, yeah. Yeah, so there was at least that, and I know there was one other angle that was very controversial that they, well, I mean, I'm sure a lot of them were controversial, but yeah.
Was it, but where, yeah, they, so, was it where they, the Nation of Domination's dressing room was destroyed?
What, they did that one.
Yeah, I know. Was that the controversial one?
No.
There was more controversial than that? What could it have been?
I don't know. I think it was... No, I think it was the Vince incest angle with Stephanie, but that wasn't...
Was that later.
Vince Russo?
That was, sorry? Vince McMahon who suggested that.
Okay, that's just weird. All right, no. So I don't know. I don't know what it was. But I got the feeling when they went to WCW, I don't know. Like, it was... When the 99 Nitro, when they extended it to 3 hours, it was like, it was kind of interesting, you know, but they really relied on the outsiders like way too much.
Yeah.
And they had like their big six, which was the outsiders. It was Brett, Benoit, Sid, and Goldberg. And they sort of just interchanged them the entire time. But it was still interesting TV, but like there was no wrestling on that show anymore. Like it was just gone. And then they take him off TV. By the time they bring him back in 2000, like that run was horrific. It was just, they made like New Blood against the Millionaires Club, but the Millionaires Club are the faces. It just didn't make any sense. Like nothing made sense. And I felt like just the fact that you're making the Millionaires Club with that name, the faces, you're running into the disaster here. And then not to mention every single minor disaster that I'm sure every podcast has already covered.
Right.
I just felt like nothing had an end game to it.
Well, and just so much is happening every show.
Yeah.
This is happening, and there's this, and this, and this, and then there's an interference here.
So you don't think that Vince sent Vince down to screw things up, to finish it off?
Why would he never bring him back then?
But they did bring him back in 2002.
Yeah, but they didn't even let him have a meeting. He had one meeting. Because the way Vince Russo tells that story is he did that just to get out of his WCW contract. Like, he tells the story, at least, look, maybe I'm remembering wrong, but I remember reading...
No, because this is news to me, I didn't know.
Oh, but I remember reading his book, because he was under a Time Warner contract.
Right.
And he wanted to go right for TNA. So he got Vince to buy out his Time Warner contract. He came in, pitched the worst possible ideas so Vince would send him home. And then he signed with TNA.
Because I'd heard something along the lines of like he wanted a retired Mick Foley and like all these guys from the Attitude Era who were like retired to like come back and take on, I don't know what it was, WCW or something, like a revamped, bring back WCW, right. Bring back the Attitude Era Raw and then have them feud, which probably should have happened. But
where did he want to do this?
Well, this is in 2002 when already at this point we're already like the NWO has just died.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So, my details are sketchy on that one.
Well,
Go ahead. No, I'm just so in recap. So you think he was legit trying in WCW?
I think so, but I could probably be convinced that it was a conspiracy also because everything was so terrible.
Well, Goldberg had said that. He was the one who said at the time, because I think it was a conspiracy.
Yeah, but these wrestlers are idiots. Like, Scott Hall still thinks Montreal's a work. Like,
Scott Hall and X-Pac think it was a work. Yeah,
and they know people directly involved.
Then again, I mean, they could just be saying that because it's like they want to make money on those shoot videos.
Right.
But they're just saying anything.
Why is anyone getting shoot? Like, they weren't there. Neither one of them was there.
No. I mean, there was some interesting arguments that one of the interviewers, I can't remember his name, but he's in all the shoot videos. He brings up an interesting point on that shoot video.
Is he the one who asks all the female wrestlers how big the wrestlers' dicks are?
Yep. Okay,
that guy. All right, good.
That guy.
Yeah, right.
He says that, like, why is the camera on a close-up on Bret Hart's face as soon as the sharpshooters let go?
Yeah.
How does the producer know to get right in on his face?
Well, I think if you operate under the producer is very possible didn't know what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, so if you don't know what's happening, you're probably trying to get those reactions.
Good point.
Like, you're trying to like make sense of everything that's happening. I don't know if Kevin Dunn was involved in the screw job, but like.
Yeah. Well, it was like as soon as the bell rings, right? It gets right on his face.
Yeah.
It could have been there longer. It could have been a shot that was chosen there for like his struggle to get out of it.
Well, in theory, like you saw him reaching back to get to get.
He gets out of it. He gets. He does get back. Get out of it.
Yeah. Well,
which
just,
he had done many
just
times.
Just as the bell's ringing, really, like.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because he had done that a bunch of times, right? Yeah. It wasn't just on Patriot that he had done that. He did it with Owen in SummerSlam.
That's right, in the SummerSlam.
SummerSlam.
Why are you saying SummerSlam?
Sorry.
Don't say sorry to me.
And WrestleMania 10.
The WrestleMania.
Yep.
He never said that one.
10th anniversary of WrestleMania.
Right. Does that bother you?
It does.
It's because it's not the 10th anniversary, right?
It's not the 10th anniversary. That's a Vince. Like, that's the one where everyone's terrified to tell Vince the reality that that's wrong.
What? What is it? Does he not understand it?
Like, we're having an anniversary.
But we're not. We're not. Like, you're having a birthday.
Appreciation of this gentleman's life. It's a funeral. We're going to appreciate this wrestler. Professional wrestler.
Oh, how did we get on the Montreal Screwjob? Vince Russo?
Something was about Farooq and Ahmed.
Right. Now, did you at the Montreal
How does that argument go? Like,
man, my foot was under the rope. Ahmed Johnson cannot be pinning me with a Pearl River plunge. No, you got to go to the back, Farooq. You got to go back. No, man, my Ahmed Johnson cannot.
Please, please, no. Please.
Ahmed cannot rock it.
Something along that line, and then they flip it around.
Well, then he trips someone and holds the foot down. Like, he's clearly there, but
yeah, he gets Ahmed's foot.
Yeah. He had the best voice, but the worst voice for a professional wrestler, but like.
But for an angry, educated man, he's best.
Like, it's very trumpet-like, his voice.
Very much, yeah.
I loved how he would say, please, no, every time. Like, someone would always lift him. Like, he'd always stand over, like, a downed guy. Like, a guy's on his stomach, and he would stand over and point at his head, and the guy would always get up and bring him into, like, an electric chair position.
Always.
It happened almost every match.
Yeah, it was like the Flair top rope spot, but for that.
but way more contrived.
Way more, and like that fall is way more dangerous.
Now, please, no, please.
No, man, please, no, please.
Why? I love that he's being polite.
Yeah.
Please, man, please.
And then when he get pinned, his leg would always, like, vibrate.
How ridiculous.
Didn't make any sense, because, like, who, like, he would go into anaphylactic shock because of a body slam? Like, that didn't make any sense.
Well, but that's the whole problem with, like, all of, wrestling ceased to be wrestling when people were getting always knocked out with finishing moves.
Yeah.
Like, you're never pinning anyone anymore. You're just fighting. It's Mortal Kombat, so you're fighting someone until they're knocked out.
Yeah, you got to hit the combination of moves and until they're exhausted.
And then pin it.
Randy Savage.
Yeah, Randy Savage. Are we talking
about Randy Savage?
What is that?
That's how I found out that Randy Savage was Jewish, was Howard Stern, the Iron Sheik on Howard Stern, in one of his drunken rants. And I didn't know this. I didn't know Randy Savage was half Jewish. I just thought that the Iron Sheik was just insane. But like they had a – you should YouTube this. This is a – it's a fake prank call on the Iron Sheik. I don't even know if Savage is actually dead at this point, but Savage is Iron Sheik is sitting there. Have you seen this?
No.
Oh, so Sheik is sitting there, like, obviously inebriated because he's just covered in green beer cans. And this guy, the guy calls in, and Howard Stern's like, "Oh, I think we have Randy Savage on the line." And he's like, "Oh," and then you hear the guy. It's not even a good impersonation of Randy Savage. It's like, "Oh yeah," it's kind of like, "Oh yeah, Iron Sheik, I'm gonna fuck your wife." It's like, and then Sheik just stands up and he screams like, "Fuck you, Randy Savage, you motherfucking Jew! I fucking kill you, motherfucker!" And he's like taking off his belt. "I fuck you with my 10-inch cock. Oh, sorry, Robin. Fuck to you, Randy Savage. I'm gonna fuck you." And it's just this chaos over nothing. It's not even a good prank call. And it's just chaos for 30 seconds. And then I was like, why is he calling him a Jew? And then I found out from other people. Like, no, Savage's mother was actually Jewish. And I was like, I did not even know that. I learned something.
Wow.
Yeah.
So,
but the first fuck you from the Iron Sheik sounds like a fuck you that he's told Randy Savage many times before.
Fuck you, Randy Savage.
You have to look it up.
I googled Iron Sheik, Howard Stern, Randy Savage. There's two things on YouTube. The first one is Iron Sheik shits on Macho Man Randy Savage, and the next one is Iron Sheik goes nuts on Randy Savage.
That's the one, because the call's not even good. And that's what's so funny about it.
Well, in one of them, he's wearing a vest, and in the other one, he's not. And I think the one where he's not, maybe he's removed the vest in anger.
Starts taking clothes off, and he's almost going to pull his pants down. And then he goes, it's out of honor to Robin that he won't do it. Like, but in a rage.
God damn it. All right, I'll check it out. So Randy Savage comes in 1985.
He does.
Right? And what I love, I think it's a really cool story. I don't think there's anybody else who has this kind of narrative that kind of lasts for their whole career in one company.
Mm.
They've never written anyone else this well in terms of character shifts. I can't think of anybody anyway. And maybe later we can kind of like go over it and see.
Mm.
But like what I love about it, and you and I are both, we both come from like a dramatic background, right? So like I think we're both kind of fans of like good, consistent writing and stuff that's really character driven.
Yeah.
Right?
So we can analyze like why we really dug it. You know, yeah. If you really dig it, we can tell you why. And if we didn't, then we can, you know, analyze that too.
Well, but that's it. And so Randy Savage is such a really interesting, deep character. He comes in 85, and one of the first angles he has is he's doing that thing where he's like every manager is trying to sign him.
Right. So there's Jimmy Hart, Bobby Heenan. Who else?
Valiant is there, I think. Jimmy Valiant.
Right.
I forget who else. Fuji.
Did Ventura have something to do with that too? I just somehow remember Ventura being involved.
Well, he was probably in there interviewing.
Okay.
But again, please tell us we're wrong. But what's important is he doesn't pick any of them. He picks Elizabeth, right? And they become this kind of this duo. And what I love about this duo is it ceases to be a Randy Savage story. His whole career really revolves around the story of him and Elizabeth. And I think it's a really cool story. So it starts there with him joining, and he's a dastardly cheater. But everyone is after Elizabeth. So even in his feuds with George Steele and whatnot, like it's all about protecting Elizabeth. He's being a dick too, but he's a dick. He's this possessive jerk. He's the Intercontinental Champion. Maybe he doesn't appreciate her, treats her poorly. he does a bunch of stuff like that. Defends her from animals and whatnot. And he becomes obsessive. He becomes obsessive about this championship, right? The Intercontinental Championship, right?
Right.
So much so that when the challenger of Ricky Steamboat comes along, he basically tries to murder him with the bell and the.
I remember seeing that, like, not live because it was taped, though, but like when it aired on a Saturday morning.
Yeah.
In, I guess, what was that? Early 1987.
Yeah.
It was violent.
Yeah.
It was a very violent attack. It was. Played perfectly to, I mean, I was 7 years old. It was upsetting.
Yeah, well, it was really well done, and I think it kind of speaks to how good Savage was, and Steamboat too, but how good Savage was at selling the intensity of things.
Like, yeah, there was something upsetting about him as a heel.
Yeah.
And we'll get to this later, but when he attacks Hogan.
Yeah.
With the Mega Power splitting up.
It's rage. So, he does everything he can to defeat this guy, right? And then he fails. He fails on this massive stage. And, like, failure for any – I mean, anybody who's ever written plays or even movies, like, failure is, like, a really powerful thing for characters. This is why I think WWF often goes wrong with their face characters, because you have to see them fail to see them overcome and triumph, right?
Yeah, and this is also Savage's first mega match. His yes. match was Steamboat WrestleMania 3 – we're talking about a mega, mega match, and it steals the show.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if people were expecting it to steal the show.
Arguably, at that point, the greatest match in company history.
For at least 7 years.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can probably I would entertain the argument that someone might like the Sheik Sergeant Slaughter boot camp match more, because that's pretty special also.
You mean prior to that?
Yes, I'm trying to think of what came prior to it that would be
better. Prior, see, yeah, that, yeah, I don't know, but I do know that everything was compared to Savage Steamboat 87 for years.
Until 94 basically.
Until 94, yeah. Yeah.
Which
and
is
so
sad.
That was yeah, so he goes down, but it's a glorious fight, and he doesn't he doesn't necessarily go down clean.
No, it's a weird pin. Steel is all over the place.
Yeah. Steel pushes him off the top, does he not?
Yes, he does. But what's really interesting, and he gets the
vision. So are the seeds being planted there?
I would imagine so. He was too good not to turn face. at that point. But not only that, is he gets the visual pin on Steamboat too. He elbow drops him, and the referee's unconscious.
That's right. That's right.
And pins him. So they're setting him up really strong coming out of WrestleMania. What I love about that match too, and again, it just tells the story of both guys really, is both of them, there's like a million near falls. So both guys are really trying to win the match.
I believe there were 19 near falls.
Yeah.
I remember reading a PWI that had counted it. There were something like 19 near falls in that match.
And the whole match is so fast.
Yeah. Oh, lightning fast. They're flying in and out of that ring.
Yeah. And these aren't cruiserweights. Like, these are big guys.
240 pounds. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's probably exaggerated, but yes.
Yeah. Right? 218 pounds, but yeah. 240 pounds. Yeah.
Yeah. So coming out of WrestleMania, he's still obsessed with the Intercontinental Championship. Right. And Honky Tonk wins it immediately.
For Steamboat. In the flukiest of pins.
Yeah. Holding the ropes and fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
And so Savage kind of becomes a bit of a tweener on Saturday Night's main event. Right. He because he's so obsessed with the title, he wants to win that title back. I remember even a wrestling magazine saying, like, I want my title back, like an interview. Like, they're really pushing that whole narrative with him.
Right.
And it comes to a head where he's getting.
So where are we? Are we in September? Are we in the summer of 87?
Yeah, summer of 87. Maybe. Yeah, close to the fall. And okay.
And this is the big Saturday Night's main event that we're heading up to. Is he still? He's still a tweener at this point.
Oh yeah. Well, I think
challenges.
He hasn't done anything to turn face, but people are cheering for him.
Because I remember as a child, one Saturday morning he comes out and he's supposed to be a bad guy, but the place just pops, and I was like, right. Oh, he must be a good guy now. And I was wondering why. What did he do? What happened? And I remember my dad saying, nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, he didn't do anything. He was just getting organically over. Like,
yeah.
In a lot of ways, he's the template for Steve Austin.
Like, yeah, but that's what I'm driving at, is that yeah. People were so digging him that they didn't have to set up an angle.
No, not at all. And that's the best kind of angle, the organic one that just develops, right?
Yeah.
So in the fall, he's getting the shit kicked out of him by Honky Tonk Man and the Heart Foundation. Right?
Is that the – yeah, and we're setting up that famous guitar shot, right?
Yeah.
Where all the sweat goes everywhere.
Exactly. And Honky shoves Elizabeth down and all that business. And then he's getting his ass kicked, and Elizabeth, out of desperation, goes back and gets Hulk Hogan, right? And so it's interesting that she brings them together, right? She brings these two together, and at first they're kind of like – hesitant partners and whatever, but as the year goes on,
I just picture the handshake, the slow handshake. As you're saying, hesitant partners, you're the slow handshake.
And their handshake never
I guess gets, that's what they were trying to telegraph.
Yeah, their handshake never gets faster. It remains slow forever.
Who would hold his own wrist on the handshake?
A psychopath.
Yeah,
yeah, a psychopath named Randy Savage.
Right. Yeah.
So.
I just remember a lot of tape and a lot of spread fingers.
Yeah, and a lot of looking at the crowd. Side. So you build the mega powers and Elizabeth.
And because I'm sorry to cut you off though, but didn't they have a couple of matches against each other? I believe the year before or something,
I think late 85. I want to say late 85 they fought each other.
Because I remember Hogan in white tights wrestling.
Yeah,
set.
I think it was late 85. Like, they had like a Boston Garden series and stuff like that. So they were enemies. So what's interesting is because they're enemies, it felt like a desperation move.
Yeah.
Right? To go and get this guy who stands for everything that's right. We're going to see in this storyline that he doesn't really.
Him himself is also severely outnumbered going against the entire Heenan family at this point.
So he understands Savage's pain.
Yeah.
So Savage and Hogan become friends, and through their friendship, he challenges for the Intercontinental again, but then he wins that tournament. He wins the world title tournament with the friendship with Hogan, with Elizabeth, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, and things go down, you know, at the main event, the big one.
Yeah, but that's just him not winning the title, right? Like.
Yeah, but it's like kind of like a replay of that first challenge to Honky Tonk War, but he loses by – he wins by count out.
Yeah, he always wins. Honky never won.
Right. Right.
He didn't win for 2 years.
Yeah. So now's the unlikely opportunity where he's in this tournament where Hogan hasn't lost the title, but yeah. He's kind of lost the title.
So Savage wins the tournament with help from Hogan. And like WrestleMania 4, it's so funny that like it had the reputation of being the long one. But by contrast to like the shit.
For many years, yeah, yes.
Like WrestleMania 35 was 7 hours long.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but it's still.
You were at Live 4.
It's Hogan, and in that celebration, it's really a moment for Savage and Liz. Like, he puts the title on his shoulders, and he puts her on his shoulders.
Yeah.
And he puts the title on her. So it's really like a maturation and a coming of age of this man. And it leads into what I think is the greatest story they've ever told in the company, which is the whole Mega Powers saga from, I would say, from SummerSlam, where they decide to team against the Mega Bucks, till their eventual explosion. Mm-hmm. And the way they break that down, like, it's clearly Savage who's the champion, right? And you can see right from the start Hogan's getting similar pops, sometimes bigger pops, and he's showing the bit of the jealousy, but not too much. And then they start with the Elizabeth stuff. They start with Hogan hugging Elizabeth. I think it was at Survivor Series, wasn't it? No, it was at SummerSlam that he hugged Elizabeth.
Well, SummerSlam was when he helped her up on his shoulders again.
Yes,
but
the hand on the ass, right?
Yeah.
And then at Survivor Series was the hug. And then Savage starts kind of shoving him, and they're like, something's not right here. And it's all based on this jealousy with Elizabeth, which is exactly kind of like what fueled him earlier against Steele and against the other challengers as well, right?
Yeah, so, a belt and Elizabeth, yeah.
Yeah, so he becomes obsessive about the belt and Elizabeth. Hogan throws him out at the Rumble. He gets pissed off about that, and rightly so. Hogan was a dick.
But there was also I just by accident saw one where he defends the title against Akeem.
Yeah.
I don't even know if it's a defense, but it's a Superstars match, which was odd to have a world championship, immortal champion wrestling on Superstars. I don't know when that had ever happened before, because you wouldn't see Hogan wrestle in Superstars. I don't even remember. I'm sure somebody could go through history of WWE and find something. But if you look in January of 89, Savage wrestles Akeem, and Bossman causes a disqualification, and Hogan comes in for the save, and Savage is not happy. And Savage is pissed at this point. And he's not happy. And in fact, he storms off. He storms off from Hogan.
Right.
And this is right before the Royal Rumble, actually. He storms off, and in fact, he grabs Hogan's shirt, which Hogan had ripped off, and he throws it on the ground.
Right. Right. So again, the jealousy's building, like the tension between the two. I also love
I think it was because Hogan's music was playing, even though Savage won the match.
That's possible.
And he's kind of looking around, like Hogan's like doing the poses and like, you know, throwing the cup in the ear to the audience. And Savage kind of throws his arms up and going, why are we celebrating you when I won?
Yeah.
And right before, yeah, go on.
No, I was just going to say, I think there's a subtle thing going on too earlier, even as early as Survivor Series, where like Savage is wearing the Mega Powers tights and Hogan never does.
Oh, that's true. I think SummerSlam too. I remember that.
Well, SummerSlam SummerSlam. I don't think he has.
SummerSlam they both do. Yeah, but then there was one where one of them is wearing it and the other one isn't.
It's Survivor Series, and I believe at the main event also it's different.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then the Rumble, Hogan throws him out, and then we get to main event, and you know, everybody's seen this thing where Savage flies out of the ring and smashes Elizabeth, but Hogan decides to take her to the back to help her. And leave Savage to get the shit kicked out of him.
Yeah.
By Boss Man and Akeem, right? And then Hogan eventually comes back, and Hogan wins the match, right?
Well, I mean, Savage slaps him and leaves, yeah, and then Hogan wins the match.
Then Hogan
yes.
has to beat both guys, which is ridiculous. Right. And I mean, Savage is completely in the right here. Like, someone else could have seen to Elizabeth, for God's sake, in the middle of this match. And we get back to the dressing room, and how does it play out?
It plays out that Hogan – so Savage slaps him in the face and leaves him,
yeah,
and goes back to tend to Elizabeth. This is after – because remember, Hogan doesn't just bring her to the back.
No,
he brings her to the back, and he stays there, and he's like holding her hand. And
please are don't we
gonna,
die.
Yeah, exactly. Are we going to go to 10 count? And then they tell him he's on the air. He's live. And he's like, oh, God, Elizabeth. And then she tells him to go back, and so finally he goes back. Right. And then he goes back, and then Savage had been getting beat on for about 8 minutes.
Yeah, by the two biggest guys in the promotion, not named Andre the Giant.
Through two commercial breaks, like that's how long it was.
Yeah.
And then Hogan comes back, and then Savage slaps him and leaves, grabs his belt, takes his belt from the table off, right, which is a detail you would never see today.
No, because he loves his belt.
Yep, takes his belt, puts it over his shoulder, walks out. And then Hogan has to win the match. He pins Akeem, I remember that. Mm-hmm. And then Savage – Hogan doesn't celebrate. He goes to the back, and he's looking for Savage. And then Savage is not really tending over Elizabeth. He's just talking to her.
Yeah.
And then Hogan comes in, and we have your standoff.
Yeah, they argue, and that's where he says he's always number three in the Mega Powers. You were number one, which is great because he uses the pinky as the number one.
Yeah, that's great.
He accuses him of having lust in the eyes.
Yep.
Lust in your eyes.
For those eyes right there. Those eyes. Yeah. Lust, Elizabeth.
And he even, like, I love that he says, too, if you wanted to, he makes it about the title.
Yeah.
If you wanted the championship, you should have come at me man to man. I would have been okay. He even says that would have been okay. Like,
it's
a cool little piece of business. And Hogan's just like, Liz, talk some sense into him. Like, he's doing that whole bit. But, like, man, Hogan was blind to his behavior up to this point. Like,
and Savage, actually, he shoves him right in the face.
Yes.
And it was legit. And Hogan was like, get your hands on my face, macho man. And it was, but he was legit. Like, in an interview later, he had said he was legit pissed at that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Macho leaves the frame and then jumps in when Hogan turns around and just pummels him with the belt and beats the shit out of him on the floor.
Yeah. And medical equipment goes knocking over. And Elizabeth is screaming.
And Brutus Beefcake's there.
Well, he comes in early. Yeah.
Brutus Beefcake, what are you doing, guys?
but the fact that McMahon sells it perfectly, because he's no longer Randy Savage. He's somebody stop that idiot.
Yeah.
Somebody stop that idiot. Like that.
The champion of the company.
It's violent at that point. He's no longer the WWF champion and Randy Savage. He's that idiot.
Mm.
And it's not like that idiot, like that stupid. It's that it like that psychopath right now who's going to murder Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
It was perfectly sold.
And he beats him well. Like, it's a great beating. Like, that he lays on him.
And Elizabeth is screaming as Macho Man is punching into Hogan's head. And it's almost like her screams are the pain that Hogan is feeling in that moment.
Yeah.
It's almost synced up to the punches perfectly.
Well, it's such a perfect picture of a friendship that is – you've seen cracks of – you've seen cracks in the friendship for, what, like 6-8 months now.
Yeah.
And now it's just destroyed. It's just been shattered on the floor.
Yeah.
A mess of medical equipment and screaming.
Yeah.
And there's real pain there. It's a real thing because, like, you get the impression that Savage is hurt.
Yeah.
Savage is hurt and betrayed by Hogan. Like, it's not a heel who's turned for nefarious reasons.
No, there's a whole buildup to it.
There's a pathos to it. Like, you are after my title and you're using my wife to get to me.
Yeah.
And I could see the lust that you have for her. That's why you couldn't stand by me. You had to bring her when I couldn't be there.
Yeah.
Right. WrestleMania 5, he loses the title, which to me feels like a massive blow to him as like a competitor, as a character, everything, right?
It was a great match, too.
Oh, great.
A great match. Yeah.
Great.
Especially for those two. Like, you wouldn't expect those two to have that kind of match, but it was a really good match.
Hogan's got a really good run of main event matches. We could talk about Savage's run of WrestleMania matches also. So great match. Savage loses the title.
And it's a perfect, like, storyline. You're in the same place as the year before where Savage had won the title.
Yep. And
with the same person in the ring that you were in the ring with at the end of the last WrestleMania.
Yeah. And the person who you lifted onto your shoulders is now torn between the two competitors based on your behavior.
Yeah.
So it's like Elizabeth is kind of like a proxy almost for the audience. Like, we stood by this guy, and now we don't know who to stand by anymore. Now, I think the company made it obvious who you should be standing by. They clearly want people behind Hogan. But when you look at the totality of this thing, like, I mean, Hogan could have easily been the heel in this entire process.
You could have, yeah. I mean, there were other seeds that they had planted, like where Savage – Hogan was wrestling on Saturday Night's Main Event against Akeem, and Savage wouldn't come to help him when there was, like, a two-on-one.
Right.
He was back with Mean Gene. He's like, no, he's all right. He's got this.
And then he eventually comes in at the end.
Eventually comes in, yeah.
Yeah. So after he loses the title, he's clearly spiraling. He brings in Zeus to, like, fight Hulk Hogan.
Sherry.
He finds a new woman, Sherry.
He's clearly on the rebound now.
Yeah, clearly on the rebound. Hitches himself to this new woman. And I find that, like, he's kind of spiraling. He wins the King of the Ring, which is, like, a vanity title as opposed to a real title.
Yeah, and I don't even think it was the win televised? I don't ever remember. I know he beat Duggan on a Saturday Night's Main Event, but he was already Macho King.
I remember the coronation.
I remember the coronation. It was taped in Lake George.
Oh, nice.
It was Glen Falls, yeah.
With all the – in Duggan's hometown?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I didn't realize that. Yeah, but they didn't make a thing about it. At the time, hometowns didn't mean anything on TV tapings, but yeah. It was one of those long 8-hour TV tapings that would last for a couple months. But yeah, that's where it was.
Right. But regardless, he gets this title, and I will say he kind of spirals a bit after this. Like he doesn't really have a ton of focus. He gets involved with Dusty Rhodes, which should have been a really great feud.
He's not even with Dusty Rhodes yet, isn't it? Doesn't he? Like he wrestles Duggan, and then he wrestles the Harts, and Bret Hart wasn't really
sure, but nothing of real value.
Nothing going on, right? For him, really.
Yeah. And even at WrestleMania, he's in that mixed tag against Sapphire.
It's a mixed tag. You would think that he would get a big one-on-one, but he doesn't.
And even Elizabeth's involved in that, too, in terms of being
drunk. She costs the team to lose.
Exactly. And then he gets the one-on-one in the summer, but it's not really a match because Dusty's concerned with Sapphire.
Yeah, he squashes him basically in 2 minutes.
Basically 90, he's kind of like spiraling and out of control, but the beginning of 91, he regains his focus.
Well, the end of 90, he's not wrestling, right? Isn't he injured?
Yeah. Because
Survivor Series 90, he's not even on the card.
Yeah, that's right, because it's the King's Court at 89, and 90, he's not there. That's right.
90's not there. He challenges the Warrior for the title. Because now it's kind of like he wants to challenge for the title, and you feel like, okay, a lot of time has gone by since he's been in that title picture. Yeah, where have you been?
Yeah.
I remember that feeling when he challenges Warrior for the title. It's like, oh, yeah, how come you haven't been in the title picture for this long? Where have you been? So now he's like he wants to reclaim something.
He wants to go back to where he was. He wants to be the person he was before.
Yeah. And it's funny because it's interesting. It's a perfect heel move because now Hogan no longer has the title.
Yeah.
So he's going to go after the guy. And Hogan's beaten him several times now on TV. So it's solid that he can't beat Hogan. So now he wants to beat the guy that beat Hogan, that, you know, or at least that he can go after somebody else.
Yeah. And he's so obsessed with this title, he sends Sherry to basically offer to fillet Warrior at the Royal Rumble. Yeah. And why is Warrior refusing these title shots?
That was odd. That was odd for a face to say no.
No, yeah.
But could it be that, like, maybe Savage – I mean, at the time, if you're looking at it as a child, looking at the Warrior being like, well, Savage hasn't earned anything yet. He got his bunch of title matches. He didn't really earn anything.
Right.
Could you make that argument for him as a kid? But it is odd to have a face
refuse
a title match.
Challenge.
Especially when it's the Warrior. You don't see the Warrior somebody ducking anybody.
No, he'd just be like, all right, let's do it.
Yeah.
But when he is turned down, Savage turns to Slaughter, and he makes a deal with Slaughter.
Do you know what it could be, just storyline-wise, though? It could be because Sherry had already insulted and slapped him in September of that year. I found on a Superstars. It was a Brother Love show.
Okay.
And she came out and she tried to emasculate him, basically. And she slapped him, and he wouldn't hit her back, and she kept slapping him over and over and over and over again. And it could have been because of that.
Right.
That he says no. Yeah, and then Savage attacks him, I believe, after that, I think. But, yeah, I think it's because of that he says no.
Okay, well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But still, it is still weird. You'd think he just want to destroy him.
Yeah.
But he makes a deal with Slaughter, and that ends up showing in the Ultimate Warrior's defense against Slaughter. He basically ambushes the Warrior with a light, with a giant light, which is amazing. And he busts that scepter on his head, which makes
him. He's running so fast in and out, like to attack Warrior. So fast.
I've never seen anybody run that fast.
No.
So he costs Warrior the title. And instead of getting that title match at WrestleMania, he gets put in the retirement match with Warrior, which I think, top to bottom, is a masterpiece.
Yeah.
Like everything about that match, and from both guys, I don't think it's a carry job at all. On Savage's part, I think Warrior plays a lot of things more subtly in that match than people give him credit for.
Yeah, because Warrior's starting to get good at this point because he's starting to learn a little bit more of the nuances because he's actually having to wrestle longer matches.
I think once you get to Warrior wrestling Rick Rude, Warrior doesn't have a bad pay-per-view match.
No.
In fact, almost all of them are great.
Yeah, he does have a good, and he's learning. He's learning at this point.
Yeah. So, but they have this beautiful match where, I don't know if you remember the match, but he's almost like telling the story of his, I always thought he was like telling the story of his career in the match to a certain degree. Like he tries to do the Ricky Steamboat thing to Warrior midway through the match.
Right.
He puts his neck on the thing and tries to, and it ends up costing him, and he hits him with 5 elbow drops and he can't get the pin. And then Warrior demolishes him and pins him with 1 foot.
Yeah.
We've all seen the match. We know how great it is. But the post-match stuff is just amazing. So Sherry starts lambasting him and screaming at him and kicking him. And who should come to save him but Elizabeth?
Right.
Right? And it's just this beautiful symmetry that, like, this whole time he's been chasing – he put the championship before everything. But in the end, it's not the championship that made him complete. It was Elizabeth that made him complete.
Right.
And I think it's actually really – it's a really cool, nuanced story. Like, I don't know who the people were crying in the audience. Like – I'll be honest, when I watch it, it makes me emotional from the perspective of – not from like the, oh my God, he's back with her, but how perfect it is in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Like he – at first he doesn't know if Elizabeth has hurt him or not, and then he puts it together, and he does this thing which I think is really great. It's a great detail, again, that no one else would think of. But like Elizabeth for his whole career held the ropes for him. And she goes to do it again when he leaves the ring, and he says no, and he holds the ropes for her.
Yeah.
And it's just perfect.
Yeah.
And she leaves the ring, and he turns to the audience, and this guy who has been like this dastardly asshole for like 2 years becomes the biggest face in the company.
Yeah.
And the reaction he gets is absolutely incredible. And he takes this like kind of final bow. And it's this beautiful, perfect moment.
Like, yeah.
He came in with her. He protected her. He became caught up in other things. He gets drawn back to he gets caught up in other things, rejects her for the sake of the other things, and then realizes that all he needed all along was her to be whole.
Right.
And it's great.
Yeah. He sacrifices everything that he has for those titles.
Yeah.
And it costs him everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he redeems himself. And then it – you know, I think if it had ended there, it would already be amazing.
Yeah.
But then he goes on to have another amazing year.
Which was not expected.
No.
And which ironically probably ended things for him and Elizabeth, because I think she was expecting him to be finished.
Yeah.
And they could make a family. But because of Warrior leaving and the steroid stuff going on, he gets called back to duty.
Yeah. And what I like about it is it's still all aimed towards her. Like, even it continues the story. He gets married at the wedding reception. A fucking psycho attacks her with a snake, right?
Yeah.
And a pallbearer. And an undead zombie, right?
Yeah.
So that happens, right? And then he has to defend her honor against this crazy snake guy, which leads to him getting bit by the snake, which leads to
her
getting slapped, and. The promo that he cuts after she's slapped is so freaking amazing. Like, where he's not even looking at the camera.
Tuesday in Texas.
Yeah, where he's pulling his hair and he's talking about how it's his fault. And, like, he can't even put into words how angry he is.
Yeah, he's completely emasculated at this point.
Yeah, and no one else can sell that intensity like him.
No, nobody could.
But, again, it's also because it's based on a four-year foundation.
Yeah.
Right? Of this relationship, right? So he goes on, he defends her honor against Jake, and then another asshole comes and tries to steal her honor.
Yeah, and it's funny because he handily pins Jake, like, every time they wrestle. Handily, easily pins him every single time. But that's, like, not enough, you know, for him.
No. No, of course not. He's got to destroy him.
Yeah.
Which makes sense.
Yeah.
And then this other asshole comes in and starts talking about
the perfect guy to come for this angle.
Yeah. He was mine before she was yours. That whole thing was perfect.
Yeah, the perfect playboy for this.
Yeah. Yeah. What great timing. And those two have such magic chemistry. Right?
Yeah, we're talking about Ric Flair, by the way.
Ric Flair, obviously. Yeah. And yeah. Don't discount how good Mr. Perfect is in this whole thing, too.
Right.
As his second. And I think they have – I love their WrestleMania match.
It's a great – it's a fantastic match because it's Savage coming out and he's just gunning for the ring.
Well, because
– it's a very different Randy Savage coming to the ring.
Time. He's running to the ring in that gold suit.
Yeah.
Because the match means something.
Yeah.
He's not coming there to win the title. Like, I mean, he is, but he's coming there to beat up Ric Flair.
And he wasn't supposed – and it's funny because he's just coming to defend her honor, but here he is back in a championship match unexpectedly, which is what he was chasing all those years, and now he has this opportunity because he's defending Elizabeth.
Yeah. It's like a complete full circle.
Yeah.
Right? And then he wins the title. And I'll be honest, I think this might be my favorite. I think the Warrior match is probably my favorite. But I like this match more than Savage and Steamboat. Because I think it has real hate in it.
Yeah.
Like, because I'm watching a lot of old NWA stuff, and one of the things Flair's really good at is eliciting, like, getting hate out of his opponents. Like, he's such a good heel that, like, almost anyone is credible against him, and you're viscerally attached to whoever's fighting him. And you're already viscerally attached to Savage based on all this goodwill he has in the bank, right? But yeah, so that match to me and Flair, it gets busted open. I love that it ends with a roll-up. like Flair's destroying his leg, and he just ends up rolling him up. Flair wins the title. Savage wins the title. They beat the shit out of him after the match. Elizabeth has to come down. And then Flair gets in her face. She slaps him. And then Savage just bolts up with a broken leg.
He kisses her.
That's right. He kisses
Flair
her.
Flair grabs her and kisses her. And then Savage,
what about me? Huh? Me? Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. So good. And then when Finkel announces, and once again.
Yeah.
I don't think he'd ever announced anybody like that.
I don't think he'd ever announced anybody. I'll never forget that. Yeah. That when he says, and once again.
And the crowd goes insane.
Yeah, because it's a total callback to 1988. And once again, yeah.
It's a callback to the year before, where, like, Savage and Liz are in the ring together.
Yeah.
And then he goes to sell
that. And a callback to WrestleMania 4 also, that he's there in the ring with Liz, with the championship. And Hogan, we're on the show that Hogan is going to retire at.
Right. He's closing out the first half of the show.
Yeah, it's the first time the championship has not been defended in the main event of WrestleMania.
No, that's true. No, actually, no. The WrestleMania 1, but yeah.
No, but I mean, well, it came out last. I mean, this is the first time where you watch the championship match in the middle of the show.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. And which was, we didn't know it at the time, but it was the final time that we saw Elizabeth in the World Wrestling Federation with Randy Savage.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And what I love, too, is that following that, he sells that leg injury for the whole year.
That's right.
Like, he sells it till SummerSlam, where he has to face the Warrior again, which is again, another little bit of circular logic. And you see a lot of the old tendencies coming in when Warrior's challenging for the title, and Savage's replies are like, I'm the World Wrestling Federation champion, and you're not. Just a lot of that, which I think is great.
Right.
Lose the belt back to Flair. And I think this is kind of where it ends for him. Like, he has the other stuff with Crush, and I think his work with Crush is really good.
Yeah.
But I think the story ends with I mean, you could use the WrestleMania winning the title back from Flair as, like, the perfect capper to this story.
It was the perfect cap. Yeah, because this one kind of – yeah.
And it becomes this fluid story, right? Like we talked about, like, he had to lose everything to become to get back what he had lost.
Yeah.
To get back to where he was. And I can't think of another guy who, number one, has that storyline, but was able to convey the right emotions to carry that storyline.
No, I agree with that. And yeah, he was the one where everything, you knew everything he was thinking and feeling.
Yeah.
And you were right along with it, whether he was a heel or whether he was a face.
Yeah. And we say that without even discounting, without even discussing the fact that he was awesome in the ring. He was cool. Like, his mannerisms, he never looked awkward, you know? He looked like a cool guy.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, what more can be said about Randy Savage?
Your man Randy Savage is on the phone.
Fuck the Macho Man Randy Savage! Let him talk!
Macho.
You jabroni, yeah. The reason why your wife don't fuck you is because she wants a real man, like the Macho Man, Randy Savage.
Fuck you and fuck your wife! I have a tenant, Scott! I jump with your fucking... I have fucking your ass! I want to show you my fucking tenant, Scott! Do you get message? Fuck you, Randy Savage! I'm embarrassed Robin is here! So I don't have to show you my tenant, Scott! To fuck your fucking ass! You are not good, jabroni Jew, son of a bitch! Fuck you, Randy Savage!
All right. Well, Randy, the Sheik was unbuttoning his pants to show you his penis.
Tenants, cock! I want to show that son of a bitch!
All right, thank you.
I can fuck your sister! I can fuck your mother, your father, your brother, all all your fucking property with my tenants, cock.
He's riding the camel.
All right, thank you, Macho Man. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, you make me mad. Yeah. You cheap juice son of a bitch.
I had Super Nintendo. I'd already finished Mario 2 and Mario 3. I finished Mario 2 in 89, that same year.
You remember the year you finished Mario 2?
I'm really good with dates.
What
I'm
was
like
happening? What was happening in the world the day you finished Mario 2?
Well, I mean, Macho Man and Hogan were feuding. The expos were collapsing in the summer.
Right. Well, that's every summer. That could be.
Yeah, but that one was really bad because they had like basically bet the house on Mark Langston.
Okay.
Chinamen were getting rolled over by tanks in Beijing.
All right.
Rod Stewart was big.
Which song? The Rhythm of My Heart?
It was like something. Someone else. It was always it was the cuckold song. Someone else. That's what I didn't call it that when I was a kid, but I basically got the idea.
You didn't call it the cuckold song as a 9-year-old child?
He's basically saying mate when you're making love to someone else. That's what I was forced to listen to in the car.
Did your parents force you to listen to?
Basically. So that's when I finished it. And but see, I was bar mitzvahed in 1992, and my gift was Super NES, which had come out the year before.
Yeah, and then you got Super Mario All-Stars at some point and played the
Lost World. I never played All-Stars. I think the first time I ever played All-Stars might have been with you, like in 88 or 89, when we went to Linda's house.
We went to Linda's house in
1988? 1998.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And we played that. It was like Smash Brothers we had played, but I never
– That wasn't on the Super Nintendo.
Okay, so I never was into the All-Star stuff.
Yeah, but
I never
so you're got not remembering All-Star. Anything else right. Why is this the thing you
I remember what songs were freaking playing on the radio. Of course
you
I'm going to
You don't even know. It's a cuckold song. It could be any Ron Stewart song.
It's not. It went someone else. And there's violins. I will literally find it for you right now.
No, don't look for anything.
Tiananmen Square.
Yeah, that's China fine. That's a major life event. Expos, tanking in the summer. That could be any summer.
No, it was the Langston summer.
I'm going to type in Langston Summer and see if anything comes up.
89. It's 89.
The Langston University Summer Transportation Institute. Lusty. Oh,
okay. So your internet's not working.
Okay. Yeah, your brain isn't working.
Hang on. YouTube. Okay. My heart can't tell you no. It might be that.
There's a picture of a
It starts like that. Hang on. Ugh, now it's playing me the ad, an Apple original.
The ads are out of control on YouTube.
They are. I can't skip over this.
Yeah. Like
you should be scared. I'm scared. Everybody's scared.
What is your algorithm sending you for ads?
Just movies.
See, mine is all like a Disney shit because my kids watch stuff on YouTube.
Oh, okay. Mine's all like how to dispose of bodies and stuff.
Nice. Well, that makes sense. You're a murderer.
Yeah.
Summer Langston is a woman that came up right away when I typed in Langston, the Summer of Langston or whatever I typed in. And it's a picture of her flashing the camera.
Okay. Well, he didn't do that. He was striking people out.
Mark Langston?
Yeah.
Any relation to Mike Lansing?
It's okay, Art Donovan.
Hey, who's the fella at second base?
Who's the black fellow? Well, YouTube took it down.
Because it didn't exist. It never happened.
Hang on. Well, yeah, look at what – yeah, because Bronfman sold the Expos. Yes, it's called When the One You Love Loves Someone Else. The one you love's in love with.
It's a completely different song than you were singing before.
Someone else. Yeah. Now a woman's singing it, but there you go. Anyways, so that's when the video game came out because of that.
We were all appalled by what took place following the match between the Macho Man Randy Savage and Jake the Snake Roberts. You heard the comments by Jake Roberts gloating over Donald. But Randy Savage, I'm just as upset over what took place out there as you are. The greatest Elizabeth. The greatest Elizabeth. You understand that? The greatest Elizabeth. Snake, the greatest. Yeah.
and I'll never forgive myself. It's the worst day of my life that I let him get her. You laid your hands on Elizabeth. You laid your hands on Elizabeth. It's my fault. It's what? Man, you said something about hanging with you, show you the dark side. Let me tell you something right now. I'm gonna get you, man. Yeah, I'm gonna get you, and there ain't gonna be no stopping me, man. I'm gonna get you. You can trust me. I said that. You already got what you wanted. Yeah. You know, I didn't even get a piece of you. I didn't even get a piece of him. I blame myself, man. I'm telling you. Touched Elizabeth, man. Touched Elizabeth. Unbelievable, man. That's it. It's over. It's over. No control, brother. Man, I'm telling you right now, man. I'm going to get you. I'm going to get you here. I'm begging right now. You made her beg, huh? You ain't seen nothing yet. I'm telling you something right now. I'm going to get you. I'm telling you something, man. I'm telling you, it ain't over. It ain't even started. You understand that? You understand that? I blame myself. I'm going to get you. Yeah. Get out of here.
Where does he rank for you in terms of, like, favorite wrestlers of all time?
My in terms of, like, favorites?
Yeah.
Oh, he's in my top three for sure.
Top three? Who would you have ahead of him?
I mean, I always loved Hogan.
Okay.
You know, I emotionally loved Hogan, you know, but he and Hogan would have to be my, you know, my two, probably.
Right.
I mean, when the Mega Powers, I preferred Savage.
Right.
Because I was like, okay, well, here's a different kind of champion, and he just looked perfect with the belt. He really did. It was the first time that I'd seen the belt on anybody else.
Other than Hogan.
Yeah, it was the first time. So it was always kind of like that belt always felt like it was just a part of Hulk Hogan's body.
Right.
And then when it was on Savage, in my mind, I was like, oh, that belt is an actual object now. Right. Because we never saw DiBiase with the title. Now with the YouTube videos and stuff, we see the clips where DiBiase holds the belt. But, you know, that was the first time where I was like, oh, the championship is a championship. It's not the thing that says that Hulk Hogan is the best wrestler in the world. It's actually a thing that people have to fight for. And it looked cool on him.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and it's not to speak at all of his WCW stuff is also stellar, I think. I don't think it's as good, but I think he does reinvent himself to a degree.
He does a lot with what he's given, but he wasn't given much.
Yeah.
At this point, it was too bad because he was just, I mean, he was always second fiddle to Hogan, whether they were the mega whatever they were called, you know, phase,
right,
when Hogan was still in the red and the yellow and Savage was in the whatever colors he would wear. And then even in the NWO angle, he was, you know, the number two guy to Hogan. So it's too bad that that's, you know, what it became. Where, I mean, other than the DDP feud.
Right.
But the DDP feud was great. That's pure Savage, that kind of feud. That's a Savage feud.
And he insisted on putting him over.
He did.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, but I think that whole way that you've wrapped that in a bow is a great way to really look at Savage, and a good way to sort of show why, on a larger scale, for those of us who grew up watching that era, why we were able to really tap into Randy Savage, no matter what he was doing, as a guy on his own who didn't need Hogan, was as good as Hogan and didn't need Hogan, but was associated with Hogan, and that kind of friction sputtered off into other things. But he was a guy, an entity unto himself, that didn't have the size that necessarily, you know, of a Warrior or of a Hogan, but in my mind was always as big.
Right. Well, he had something that Hogan didn't. No one was better at intensity.
Yeah.
No one was better at intensity, and no one was better at selling the emotion of a match.
Yeah, because Hogan, you know, was more of the hero, the superhero, and Savage had superhero qualities. There's no question. But because he had a woman, he had his woman with him.
Right.
That tapped into something that the males could could really understand. And then when he would protect his woman, that was also something that the women really tapped into on an emotional level.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think we can all – I don't know. I think it's very easy to tap into the idea of losing sight of what's important in your life, taking someone for granted, which he actually ends up doing, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I've had to check myself for taking people for granted at times, and, like, I get it. Like, and he kind of did the same thing too, right?
And it kind of – and it's funny because it's like this, because when we meet someone, it's very exciting.
Yeah.
When we say goodbye to someone, it's always difficult. Now, whether way it is, whether it's through a fight or, unfortunately, a death. And that's kind of human life. And in between is a lull. That not every relationship is a lull. I'm just saying, compared to those two, the beginning and the end, it's not, you know, sometimes we can take them for granted. And that, I think what you're saying is so true for this, is that we definitely see that in a very shorter period of time with Randy Savage and Elizabeth.
Mm. Yeah. And
boy, this got deep for a wrestling podcast.
But it's true. And what you say about goodbyes is interesting, because we hang on to these things that have since died. And it's almost like that breakaway and cut is worse than – it's like that severing of the relationship. We might be in a shitty relationship that doesn't work anymore, but the severing of the relationship feels like it's going to be more painful.
We hang on to it. Yeah.
Hmm. You know, when my dad died, so this guy came up to see me that I've never met before. And he, like, he came up and he kind of shook my hand and offered his condolences or whatever. And he kept saying to me, "You got to keep short accounts," which I thought was really interesting. And at first I didn't know what he meant. Like, when you're talking about accounting, like, I didn't want to insult the guy at my dad's funeral, you know. But he was talking about not carrying bullshit, like, because suddenly someone might not be there anymore. Right?
Right, right.
And I think there's something interesting too, to tie it back to Savage, because, like, WWE didn't keep a short account with him.
No.
And in the end, it kind of puts a – I don't want to say it puts a damper on his career, but it's very sad that we were never – he was never given the proper send-off that he deserved because of pettiness and because of bullshit.
Right.
Because he just went up and died.
Yeah.
Right? Like, had he been alive just a year or two later, he would have been celebrated. They would have brought him back in the same way they brought Warrior back.
Yeah.
I mean, I would imagine, unless he bangs Savage, unless he banged Stephanie, but, you know, that's a whole
probably
other thing.
Probably. Yeah.
But that's, to me, what the saddest part of his career is, that when he was finally given a place in the Hall of Fame and somewhat celebrated, he wasn't alive to enjoy it.
But it's funny, because it kind of keeps the mystique of him bigger in my mind. It's almost like Bret Hart. When Bret never came back, there was something bigger about him in my mind.
Right.
Than when he came back, because they never really did it right.
Well, he had a stroke back. When he came back.
Yeah, but it was just – it's not even that he had a stroke. It's just they brought him back so many times, and then every time they would bring him back, it was more and more irrelevant. He was just there, like, for that Michael Cole, Jerry Lawler final match. Like, there was no reason. It was like, oh, it's Bret Hart. Yeah. And he used to feud with Lawler. It's like, oh, well, I mean, all right. Like, is that what Savage would be doing? You know, it's
– I don't know. I'd like to think that, like – I mean, maybe that's what would have happened to Warrior too, if he had
– I think it would. I think it would. Yeah. I think the first few times they bring him back, it's like, oh, that's super – it's like Goldberg. It's like the first time they bring him back, it's like, that's super cool. He beat Brock Lesnar in 90 seconds. Then it's like, oh, man, he's now pinning Bray Wyatt. It's like, oh, jeez.
You spent a year building up the Fiend.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like that's a gross, like, that's in the opposite direction of, like, the way they should be using people. That's like no, it's not 1999 anymore. But it's almost like with Bret Hart too. It's like, it's kind of like, okay, well, he came back, he got his revenge on Vince McMahon, and we know that physically he couldn't keep up. But we got that moment. That's amazing. But then they're bringing it back for other stuff, and it's like, do we need to see the other stuff now? Because it's kind of, we got the point, you know. And it kind of devalues him in my mind, because I think it's definitely not because of the performer, by the way. There's no way I'm saying this about the performer. I'm saying about the way that the WWE has changed its culture, where it's no longer about making superstars. It's about, look how big this brand is. So they make the stars look kind of smaller.
But do you think they still do? Like, I agree with you in terms of bringing them out, like you're talking about with Bret Hart. But do you think that they do that with the Hall of Fame guys?
Yeah.
But like who have you seen that?
And I'm only saying that in the last like 5 to 10 years. I'm not saying that when they would do it like in 2005, for example, when Austin came back at WrestleMania 21.
Right.
It was treated like a big deal. It was right. Like it was cool. He came back and he had Piper on the. He did a Piper's Pit was, you know,
Carlito.
Yeah, exactly. It was good. It was great. But I'm not so. But then they didn't have the same philosophy. It's like, but now it's like, it's a different. It's just different. It's like when they bring back Mick Foley for the umpteenth time, or they bring back Shawn Michaels. It's like it's not a big deal. It's like, oh, here's another goofy guy, or they bring back DX again, or they bring back Evolution again. It's like,
right,
it's not a big deal anymore, and these guys are much older and they can't physically compete, but they keep dragging them out again because they haven't created any new stars. So I think that all of that is what sort of creates that kind of thing, whereas Savage kind of like rode off into the sunset on his own, and we never got to see him get normalized. Is that a word?
I guess.
Yeah, we never got to see like old man Savage, like old man Flair. Now you see Flair, right, and you're like, oh, I'm glad he's alive. Like that's what I see when I see Flair. I'm like, oh, I'm glad he's alive and he's smiling. He seems happy. I never had to think that for Savage.
No. Although I'd be just as happy with him not in the WWE and not dead. Like.
Yeah, but I mean, if there is a way to go though, that's a pretty good way. I mean, of all the ways that we can go, I mean, very quick heart attack into a tree. I mean, woof, that's great in the sense of there are a lot of painful, slow ways to go where our humanity is like, you know, we can't even pee on our own anymore. You know, like I'm talking stuff like the stuff we don't even think about now because we still have our health. If I were to go, I'd want it to be quick, and he didn't have to suffer. So I think that that's a really good thing to take out of that.
What do you mean if you go?
I mean, if I go in the next couple years.
Are you under the impression that you're going to live forever?
No. If I go in the next couple of years, yeah. I just I always say my biggest fear is dying in an old folks' home. That's the scariest one for me. You know, I'd rather go real quick.
My biggest fear is like getting hit in the head or something, and waking up and my kids are all grown up. Like I've been in a coma,
right,
for like 15 years or something.
And yeah.
When I was a kid, I used to always dream about going to jail, and it was always about what I was missing on the outside. Like I guess. I'm still terrified of that for whatever reason.
Yeah, I had a dream last night that there was a math test that I had to take. I was back in school.
Nice.
It was terrible.
I you know, up until I went back to school, I dreamt about school all the time.
Yeah, same here. I used to have repetitive dreams. I still have dreams that it's opening night for a play, and I've not memorized one line.
Right. Yeah.
I have to ask the other actors, like, can you hand me your book so that I could hold the book in a pocket on stage and somehow get
– Me, it's always – it's the wrong play. Like, oh, yeah. I've rehearsed King Lear, but now we're doing Hamlet.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, as a – I mean, I've been lucky. I've done a lot of the Shakespeare plays. So, like, in my dream, it's always one I've done before. So I'm, like, struggling to be like, how am I going to fucking remember this?
Right.
Like, I did King Lear 20 years ago. How am I going to figure out what the lines are now?
Well, I think this was really cool how you wrapped this whole thing together.
Yeah. I don't know if it's me or, like, it just – it just makes a lot of sense. And it doesn't compare. Like, I mean, when you look at Hogan, right? You look at Hogan's storyline, like, it's like he comes in, he wins the championship. He gets turned on by a friend. He gets revenge against the friend. He gets attacked by the Heenan family. He triumphs over the Heenan family. He gets turned on by a friend. He fights the friend in a cage. His other friend turns on him. He fights him at WrestleMania 3. You know, it's all the same thing with little or nothing doing – nothing's really changing him. Like, Hulk Hogan, the character who comes in 1984, is not really different from the guy who's like – when Vince asks him if he's going to retire, I don't know. Like, it's the same. Yeah. It's the same guy, right? Whereas with
but it's interesting because all of that is sort of business dependent. It's like, okay, what's best for business? What's the best angle we're going to do? Okay, it's going to be Hogan against big guys now. Okay, now we're going to do Hogan against the friend who's turned on him. You know, and they'll mix and match that, and then oh, Hogan against another good guy. You know, and then everybody else kind of has to have their storylines and characters remapped based on what those do. Oh, Hogan's going to go do a movie. So, okay. So who's going to be the champion? You know what I mean? Like that it's interesting to see that those other storylines seem to come together more nicely as storylines because the Hogan stuff has to be taken care of first. And that's completely financially dependent. Oh, we're going on network TV. So do we want Hogan challenging for the title? Or do we want to have him as the champion? You know what I mean? Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, that's the decisions, you know?
And when you look at all the great characters in the company history, the greatest ones are the ones that have turns for definitive reasons, not just because, right?
Right.
Like Bret Hart in 97, you slowly see him get more and more bitter, right? Until the point he just snaps on the audience and on Vince McMahon, right? I think he becomes a great character. I think that's when he actually becomes a great character, is in 1997. Whoa.
Bret Hart screwed Bret Hart.
I have absolutely no sympathy.
He's a very special professional wrestler. Sorry, go on.
Fine.
But his voice is slightly higher at that point because he's younger.
Right.
Whereas today it would be Bret Hart. Hang on, Bret Hart screwed Bret Hart.
Yeah, and even The Rock. The Rock, the fans booed him at WrestleMania 18, so here we go. Like, you're no longer allowed to cheer for me. And I can't think of a lot of guys since then that have had that kind of logical turn that where the something that happened in the storyline changed the person. And I find Savage's entire story was changed, was about change.
Yeah.
I also think he's the early Mr. WrestleMania. Like because I mean he's not
from 3 through 8, except for 6, but
6 is not a great card.
No, 6 is no card except for the main event.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you can make an argument the Demolition win is big, but...
Yeah, okay, fine.
But it's not a great match.
But it's more of a moment, not a match.
Yeah, but he's got the best match at every one of those except 6.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess, like, you look at 4, and it's like his whole body of work in 4 is a great performance.
Mm-hmm.
He has the best match at 8 as well, right? He would have had the best match at 9 if he would have fought Bret Hart.
There's no reason he shouldn't have fought Bret Hart. I guess they didn't want to divide the audience.
But why?
I guess that's the thinking.
Who cares?
I guess they don't want to make him a heel at this point because Vince wants to make him the Babe Ruth of the World Wrestling Federation.
How many Babe Ruths has this guy gone through?
A lot of them. I guess he's the Joe DiMaggio at this point. But no, because at this point, remember, he's like jobbing to Yokozuna on a belly-to-belly suplex the week before WrestleMania.
Yeah, he's trying to
pin. Was like, oh, that was his status, was just like, shook, there's your slot, pal. Like, that's where he was put.
Right.
I mean, if this were Japan, the way they book things in Japan is Bret against Savage at that point.
Right.
I mean, there's no question that Bret goes over Savage at that point. There's no question in my mind. I guess they don't want to turn him heel because they want him to be the spokesperson, you know, wear the Ica Pro t-shirts and shake hands. So I guess that's the thinking.
Right.
But I still would have preferred a Bret Savage match than a Bret Yokozuna match.
I think, I mean, 93 is one of those really interesting, like, rebook years, right?
Oh, for sure.
Because, like, you could do Savage at Mania, or you could have Bret beat Yoko and have him fight Savage at King of the Ring.
You could do that. You could have had the Shawn Michaels feud.
Yeah, with Savage.
With you know, Savage.
You know where Savage would have been really interesting? Would be if like Vince brought him back in 98.
Yeah, that would. Oh man, that would have been very interesting.
Against Austin?
Yeah, of course.
Like that's a feud. It's a shame we never got.
Yeah.
Because both guys were really good at intensity.
Yep. Yeah, that would have been fantastic. But yeah, it's interesting that it petered out there with Savage because. I mean, because he's sitting there at the broadcast booth for 93 and 94, and you're thinking, oh, there's so many opponents that he could have had, you know. But he's wearing a tux.
There's
he's
no just, stars.
There were stars, but they were used in their own way that were not like malleable. Like you could have wrestled Lex Luger at any point, but they were using Luger for other things.
The wrong things.
Yes. But that's what I'm saying. So it's like, well, I mean, they could have, but they didn't. You know, the Crush feud was fine. It was good. But, you know, especially going into 95, they really could have used him.
Yeah, of course. He would have been very interesting in 95. He would have been interesting in 96 with all the influx of new talent.
Yeah.
Imagine Mankind beating the shit out of him.
Yeah, you get Mankind beating him up or Vader beating him up would have been or Austin beating him up.
Yeah, any one of them. Well, they wouldn't have done Austin early because they had no plans for Austin at first. But
right. But yeah, I think that's a great episode right there. I think that this whole thing has wrapped up really, really nicely with a nice bow tie, like Savage wore at the end.
Yes, a nice bow tie. Well, listen, if you like what's happening on the North South Podcast Network, check out the other shows we have. We got all kinds of stuff going on. We got JT and Chad doing the Wrestling War Zone. I believe they're somewhere in the middle of near April 96 at this point, looking at
Chad. Chad is a good wrestling fan's name.
It is, isn't it?
I like it. I like Chad as our JT and Chad. It does sound like a couple guys that would have gone to a lot of ECW shows back in the day.
Right, right.
Like the guy, you know, the guys that hung out in the front row. They wouldn't have been front row. They would have been like the side. Like, oh, it's JT and Chad over there.
JT and Chad, but Chad is very Southern.
Oh, that's cool. Okay. Yeah. So he would have been at
The Smoky Mountain Show, perhaps.
The Smoky Mountain Show with the Brian Lee brawls. Okay, that's cool.
But Chad's great, and they're both great on the show. And if you like Chad Campbell, guys, he's also got The Fighting Spirit of 06, which is where he's going through the year 2006 week to week, talking about everything that happens week to week. He went back because he was like, I'm not sure about this year, so I want to check it out and kind of see what it's like. He's also got Carolina Dreaming, which is really cool. He's suggesting matches. PlaceToBeNation.com is doing our stretch project for the year is the greatest WCW match of all time. And he's suggesting matches from some of the earlier years of Jim Crockett Promotions. What do you think your favorite WCW match of all time is?
What is mine?
Yeah.
WCW match?
Yeah,
WCW and WA. I'm not as literate on it as you are because I only watched – I don't know, from 93 to the end?
Sure.
Ooh, man. Because I didn't watch the classics. I'm exposing myself here because I didn't watch the original, after the fact, the Steamboat Flare stuff.
I'm only watching the classics now.
Oh, okay, yeah. See, I feel embarrassed almost because all these guys who grew up on the real stuff. Man, that's a good question. I can't even think of anything. I just feel, you know what? I think Guerrero, Mysterio, Halloween Havoc 97.
That's a good pick.
Yeah, that one's a perfect matchup.
That's a good pick. We got Jacob Williams with the Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast going through the Ruthless Aggression era. And we've got, I guess my shows, the year that was, we just finished up last week, 1993, as the third worst pay-per-view year of all time. Funny we're talking about it today. We also, JT and I have...
That was the year my father actually said, I'm never buying another pay-per-view again. He said it twice. He did not purchase Survivor Series 93 based on the disappointment that was SummerSlam 93 with all the count-out finishes and disqualifications.
Survivor Series 93 is awful.
Terrible. The whole year is really bad, especially WrestleMania 9 with all the bad finishes. And then SummerSlam with all the non-finishes, it was like, what are we paying for? I remember that. King of the Ring was great, but no, I agree with that. 93 was pretty bad.
King of the Ring is the only good show that year.
That's what I'm saying. It was the whole year was wow.
Bad. Yeah, I went through it recently on the year that was, which is the '93 show, and like just going through WrestleMania, it's like there's a count out, then a murder with the tag matches, then the two doinks, then a roll up, then Jimmy Hart impersonating a ref, perfect with his feet in the ropes, chloroform, salt in the eyes, bucket on the head.
It was every match you couldn't have one. It was terrible. It was terrible.
Yeah,
and we got the count out there. Yeah, we started with the count out, right?
Yeah, but yeah. Still way easier to watch than any of the last like three WrestleManias.
Huh, interesting.
Because it's fast.
Yeah,
it's fast. You have nostalgia. Jim Ross, Savage, and Heenan are on commentary. Like, It feels kind of at home.
And in SummerSlam, I mean, it starts really good. You got the Razor and DiBiase, and then you got the Heavenly Bodies and Cent. But then it's like the greatest Intercontinental match of all time falls flat. And then you've got Brett. With the lawyer, all fun as it was, but Brett loses the King of the Ring.
Right, with Lawler with his fist in the air on the stretcher.
Yeah, and then like the coronation of Lex Luger becomes a coronation on a countout. Like, it was, the whole thing was like, what is this?
I have a hypothesis about why wrestlers today are no one is great at telling stories anymore. I think it's because they all grew up only on WWF, WWE. Whereas the great storytellers that we used to have all grew up with a mix. That's one thing I'm noticing going back and watching the old NWA stuff is everything.
Yeah, I mean, even when the guys would come up from other promotions, when we still had that.
Yeah.
You'd be like, oh, that guy's decidedly better. Or he's decidedly good.
Yeah, it's much more based on realism.
Mm, yeah.
Anyway, check us out. North South Podcast Network. Leave us a review. Subscribe to the channel. Thank you so much for joining us on Montreal to Memphis. Reg, anything on your way out?
That's it. Thanks, everybody.
All right. Catch you later. Yeah.